Welcome to Comics.
Episode 206. This week, we talk about Miss Marvel, No Normal. Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes. See what we're reading next. Send us a message. Or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the casting.
Repository.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny? I feel kind of dumb. I didn't even think to look there. So I bought the trade on Comixology, which is not like a big deal, but I don't know why I didn't think to look on MDCU. I kind of just, is it MC?
MDCU. Marvel MDCU. Digital Comics Unlimited.
It's kind of confusing because it has DC in there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. Ever since we started doing this best of, I've just like gone and bought the comics on Comixology or Dark Horse, unless I have the comic already, the physical copy. It's just like too convenient. I don't even have to like, I just have to log into the website and click some buttons and then I have the comic.
Yeah. Well, and they're the best ofs, and you'll always have these, even if you don't pay for your MDCU.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it's not a bad thing. So what we're going to do is we're going to take this one, right? And we're going to all sign this one and send this to Raymond as his Patreon patron comic. So when I go to our local comic book shop later this week, I don't know if I'm going to pick up a single form. I might try and see if they have number one. It'll probably be like a reprint of number one. But if they don't have that, I'm just going to pay a little bit more and get him to trade. And I mean, sure. That's probably like, that's a good chunk of what he's given us as a patron so far to do that. But I don't care. I'll do it out of my own pocket.
I'll contribute.
It's such a boost to have somebody like give us that vote of confidence. Like, that's awesome. Good on you, Raymond. That made us feel good. So I'm going to give it back for him. And then we'll send him that probably next week or soon. Soon, Raymond. Don't worry. Soon.
I want to chip in because I find it extremely flattering. And it's just like awesome that someone listens and cares. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we just do this because we love to do it, but when somebody else likes what we're doing enough to spend money on it, it is, like you said, Jen, it's just extremely flattering. And it makes you feel good, like what you're doing matters to somebody other than yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I've had somebody ask me before, like, I've said I'd do a podcast for this and that, and say, oh, well, what do you do it for? I'm like, fun? Because I would want to sit around and bullshit about comics anyway with my friends, so
yeah, exactly.
Why not put it on the internet? But having that be reason, that's reason enough, but it's great to know that somebody else enjoys it too, and that somebody else enjoys bullshitting about comics in another country all the way up there in that foreign land of Canada.
So far.
So far. So David, you were on another podcast this week?
Yeah, so it's funny. So we have, we have some friends who actually have a whole podcasting network.
Yes.
And
Night of the Living Geeks.
Yeah, Night of the Living Geeks. Go check it out. They have some great shows. But one of the shows they have is called Magic the Chattering, and it's about Magic the Gathering. Yeah. And so they invited me on to their fourth episode.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. But the best part about it was like a flashback to when we first started doing podcasts. Because the two hosts of the show, Mitch and Brandon, this is their first podcast. So they really like they're doing something that they're talking about something that they really enjoy.
Yeah.
And it comes through in the show, but they haven't really, it's a new show. It's not totally smooth yet, but it was great fun. I told them that I'd love to come back for whatever reason.
They need to get me on there to talk about banding, I'll tell you what.
Yeah. If, you know, so listeners, if you want to hear me, if once a week is not enough, go check out Magic the Chattering.
Once a week of this sexy voice.
Yeah. But you know what? So these guys, the Night of the Living Geeks guys, turned their garage into a podcasting studio. And
it's a baller setup.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous.
I'm hella jealous of their setup.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's like a friggin' radio studio in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Dang.
Yeah.
The microphones have those filters on them in front of the mouth. Those
pop filters. So when you do your P's and your B's, it doesn't.
But yeah, if you're into Magic the Gathering, go check out Magic the Chattering. I'm on episode 4. I think the episode is called Infinite Squirrels or something.
Yes, it is.
Because we talked about infinite combos in that. But then, check out the other Night of the Living Geeks shows. There's some really good ones. And there's something for any geek taste. Yeah. So
their comic show is pretty good, too. I'd recommend giving it a listen. They do more like the current comics kind of thing. And they do like, have you read this comic, this new thing. It's more of that kind of slant, but it's a fun show. It's not quite what we do. It's different, but it's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So you guys ready for this week's comic?
Yeah,
I am so ready.
Yeah.
This week's comic.
So this week we read Ms. Marvel, No Normal by G. Willow Wilson with art from... 206 goddamn episodes, and I still do not know how to put in a friggin' artist credit. I am the worst at this.
You are. Jen and I are not at fault at all in this. It's all on you, Andy, to put the artist credit.
It is. I know. I'm the only one with accents to the notes. So save me. Who is the artist on this? Because they deserve credit.
It's Adrian Alfona?
Alfona?
A-L-P-H-O-N-A.
Alfona.
Adrian Alfona.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Adrian Alfona.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Definitely deserve credit, because Adrian did some good fucking work on this. On a lot of different levels. Like, the art is good for one thing, but, like, I'll just get right into it. One of my favorite panels in this was when Kamala is in the locker room, the girls' locker room, and she kind of, like, breaking it up, and then the lacrosse team comes in. And it's such a little thing. But I love this panel, because you see the lacrosse team as they're coming in, and they're, like, the most diverse group of high school girls you have ever seen. One of them is, like, humongous fat, and I'm not body shaming. I'm humongous fat, too. Just, she's a big girl. And then there's one that's, like, super tall and lanky and awkward, like, the other end of the body shaming spectrum. One of them is also Muslim and completely covered. And, like, if you look at this group of female lacrosse players, just a throwaway panel or two of people, there's not a normal person in that group. There's just not. And that's, like... I love those two panels because it's kind of like the entire message of this comic in like one or two panels is all of these people make this team and none of them look normal. None of them are normal. They're all awkward and weird in some way, but they're the lacrosse team. They're doing something perfectly normal for high school, but none of them themselves are normal. And I love that panel so much. And that without as good of an artist, I don't think it would have been pulled off nearly so well.
Well, I think I would argue that it is almost normal because, as opposed to what we would typically see in background characters in the comic, I mean, they're not even background characters. They're like the set pieces, right? Almost.
Yeah.
But the fact that there is a variety of shapes and sizes is actually more probably realistic than what we usually get.
Exactly. That is the whole point of this comic. Is that is what's normal. The fact that none of them are, air quotes, normal the way that Kamala Khan sees normal.
Yeah, there's a variety of people, and that is realistic. Especially, I think we've probably talked about this before, but the three of us living in the San Francisco Bay Area have a unique perspective on what normal is, because, you know... The amount of variety in people, in shapes, sizes, religions, races is normal around here, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I work in the high tech industry, and the majority of the people in my company are Indian, but there's a huge variety among of people that I see during the day, every day. And to me, it never really... It's normal. Like, it doesn't occur to me that I'm seeing all these different, this huge variety of people, with different backgrounds and stuff. It just is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, when this comic came out, my friends and I were talking about, like, basically all the hubbub around having the first, like, Muslim headliner character. And, like, someone was like, oh, hey, did you hear about this? And I was like, what's weird about that? And then I realized that there, you know, it's not everywhere where everyone has that. Like, why is that different reaction? So, like, it's like David said, our version of normal is really different, I think, than a lot of other people's. But on the other hand, I mean, people always say, like, oh, there is no such thing as normal, right? It's the quote-unquote average, but nobody in and of themselves is completely average. Everyone is unique in some way, so, like, I don't know. I guess normalcy, in the way that Kamala sees it, is kind of one of those things that, like, you want as a teenager, but that doesn't exist, really, and then you grow up and kind of realize, like, oh, you know, you don't need that to be content.
I don't know. I mean, you say you don't need that, but, like, there's, if you are, especially if you're a woman, but even if you're a guy too, and you look at, like, the way people and body image and all that stuff is portrayed in the media, on television, on everything, like, there's a normal portrayal of what a normal woman looks like on television and on the media and in comics up until the last couple of years. There is a quote unquote normal woman and a quote unquote normal guy in each of those roles, and, like, somebody like Kamala doesn't fit there. Like, if Kamala's watching television, there's not other people on television like Kamala. There are lots of people on television like Zoe, but there's not people like Kamala, which is why I love that, like, that message is in this comic, and then that also is why this comic is important. That's good, like, ironic meta going on right there.
Yeah, I was going to say something along the same lines, you know. I think that's part of the value that this comic presents to readers, right? It's this, you know, to a lot of us, like I recognize that this is, that it's different, or it's something that's new, the fact that there is a Muslim female comic book headlining superhero, right? And so, you know, but to me, it seems almost like, oh, that's just inevitable. It doesn't seem exceptional because I see lots of female Muslims every day.
Yeah.
Not like a lot, but, you know, it's not something that is out of the ordinary for me. But for a lot of people, it is, you know. They're just parts of the country where there aren't a lot of, there isn't a lot of diversity. Mm-hmm. And so this, what's great about this is that, about this comic is that it presents that to the reader. Like, it presents something that, you know, it's not that being a super stretchy superhero is realistic, but that there are people like Kamala out there just living their lives, and their version of normal is like something totally different from ours. And it just makes for an interesting, you know, makes for an interesting comic.
Yeah.
I kind of just reiterated what you said.
But. Dude, but like you're talking about like you see these people all the time and you don't even register. Like, honestly, the only time I've ever caught myself going, oh man, that sucks to be Muslim. Other than when you see all the stuff about, like, discrimination in the news, but, like, personal experience-wise, when I've had that feeling, like, my office is located inside a gym, and so I have to walk through the gym to, like, get out of my office and, like, go do other errands, and you see Muslim women in the gym, like, working out, and they're, like, in the completely covered, like, because they have to be completely covered, and they have, like, the head wrap thing going on. It's like, oh god, I do not I want to imagine doing cardio completely covered up. That must suck. That's the only time I've ever had a thought that it would suck to be different like that. That's the only time I've ever, like, that's ever been a thing, even. Because on the other end of the spectrum, I remember when I first got moved to a management role at work, I had to go to a discrimination training, and it was like, don't hire somebody just because they're white. And then I was laughing because, I mean, I work with students, and I hire students, and because I hire students, they graduate and they leave, so my department turnover is, like, annual. I have to interview tons and tons of students, and I think in the last 8 years of me interviewing people, like, that's probably, like, 50 interviews I've done. Maybe two of them have been white people. So, like, the idea in this area of having to get a training, like, don't hire just white people. I'm like, if I hired just white people, I wouldn't have employees. When you talk about, like, diversity and how it's so much what you're exposed to. But that's a good write-off. But I think G. Willow Wilson did a really smart thing in making this comic about teenagers. Because even if you grew up in an area where diversity isn't an issue, for teenagers, it becomes an issue because teenagers are really good about pointing out things that are different. Because Kamala lives in fucking Jersey City. There is diversity up the wazoo in Jersey City. And the only way that your religion, your ethnicity, your gender, the only way any of that matters is if somebody points it out and makes a thing out of it. And in that area, the only people who are really going to point it out and make a thing out of it, and that you can know will definitely be the kind of people to point out and make a thing out of it, are fucking teenagers, especially fucking teenagers like Zoe, who say shit like, you smell like curry. Oh, I wanted to fucking punch her when she said that.
I actually took issue with Zoe, and yes, she was obviously meant to be unpleasant, and yes, she was meant to, like, embody all kinds of ignorance and assholishness, but she was so tropey over the top. Like, she was the unpleasant white person. Right? And I don't know, like, so I'm half Filipino, and in this area, we have a very high Latino population, and I often get mistaken as being Latina. So, like, I've had all manner of crazy racism directed at me. And, you know, I've never met a single person who embodied all of it the way she does. It felt like, it almost felt like so caricaturish that you go, nobody's really like this. Which, in a way, for me, kind of defeated the point. Right? Like, because people do say all the crap she says, it's just more spread out in your daily life. Like, I guess my issue isn't so much that Zoe exists in this comic, it's that when you have someone that unpleasant, they become less believable, and when they're less believable, like, it's easier to dismiss all the, like, weird racist crap that people actually get. Right?
Like, I'm laughing because as you say that, I was about to say that Zoe reminds me very, very much of my high school girlfriend.
Oh, God.
Who I don't miss because she broke up with me because she cheated on me with an even nerdier guy. But then it was okay because she cheated on him with a huge pain in the ass jock. And she, like, all of the crap that you hear Zoe say, I could hear coming out of her mouth. So you say, nobody's really like that. And I say, I know somebody like that. And I think that's just a difference in where we were raised. Because as I pointed out before, I was raised in, like, one of the most conservative areas of the state of California, which is a super conservative area of the country, which surprises a lot of people because they think California equals liberal. But our Central Valley is hella hardcore conservative. And yeah, there are a lot of people down there exactly like this. It's scary. I mean, it sounds like a trope. It sounds like a trope to us living here. It really, really does sound and look like a trope. But, like, that whole smell like curry all the time stuff? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've heard shit like that before. A lot. And it's just... It's horrible.
I guess... I mean, I totally believe you that, like, you've met people like that. It's just mind-boggling to me that you can find it all in one package, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, I know people who are, like, I know a variety of people, and it's all kind of in an older generation, actually, who are terrified of Muslims, and, like, they don't have any sane reason whatsoever for that. Yeah. I know people who call Indian people ragheads. It's like, what? Right? But I've never... And yes, that is fucking terrible. Do not do that.
No.
But, like...
Also, that's the wrong religion.
Yeah, right. Like, But I've never met it all wrapped up in one person. So I guess... What I'm saying is, thank God.
Like, and well, God, really, thank God.
Unbelievable.
Like, I mean, thank God we're in an age where this comic can get made, and not just get made, but get made by one of the two major publishers. You know, and I like this comic. I mean, you talk about awesome minority portrayal in comics. I mean, Kamala is a religious minority, an ethnic minority, and a gender minority, and it's all pulled off and handled awesomely and gracefully. And, like, on the one hand, duh, of course it is, because G. Willow Wilson is a Pakistani Muslim woman. So, of course, she has the perspective to do this gracefully. But also, like, fucking good on you, Marvel, for greenlighting this. For having G. Willow Wilson, I don't know what the relationship was, but I'm assuming having somebody like G. Willow Wilson come to Marvel and be like, I want to write a comic that's like this. And have Marvel say, yeah, we'll print a couple thousand copies of that and distribute it all across the country. Fuck it. Like... just that takes a little bit of balls in itself. So, like, on the one hand, I want to say, like, this is handled well, and that's all well and good, but good on Marvel for green lighting it and sending it out and, like, not making an issue out of it. Like, I don't know about you, but I didn't see anything or hear anything in the major news about how Kamala is Muslim. I saw stuff in comics media, but I don't feel like they blew it up and sent it to The View like DC did with Alan Scott and being gay.
Or even when Peter Parker died in Ultimates and Miles Morales. Yeah, that was all over the place because Spider-Man.
Spider-Man's black.
Yeah. And to me, it's like, why is this even a thing? Whenever comics appears in the news in this capacity, like Miles Morales or the Alan Scott being gay thing, and then there's, like, you know...
You brace yourself.
Well, there's, like, pundits, right? Yeah. On both sides of the political spectrum, I guess you could say, that feel the need to... They get upset. My question is, why do these people care? They never talk about comics, and all of a sudden...
They probably never read a Spider-Man comic.
Yeah, and now, ooh, man, Spider-Man's black. It's gonna ruin society. You know what? No, it's not. If you have read, like, if these people actually enjoyed comics, they would know that this is just how comics work. Things change. And
they could have read an X-Men comic any time in the last 40 years, because that's kind of about race.
You know what my reaction was when Alan Scott, when they announced he was gay? My reaction was, hey, isn't his son gay?
Yeah.
Because pre-New 52, his son Obsidian is gay. And I thought... And then I was, like, upset because they were getting rid... I was like, oh, yeah.
They're getting rid of Obsidian.
Because I like that character. Yeah. Because he's gone now. And
we talked about this last week when we talked about rebooting.
We did?
Yeah, we talked about how they got rid of Obsidian to give Alan Scott and make Alan Scott gay, but then it didn't end up mattering because he doesn't have a partner, yeah. And you get rid of that awesome supporting father of a gay child relationship.
Yeah, and so it's like, you know, none of these things are a big deal. Right?
Yeah.
But for some reason they become an issue for these people in the news who only care because it means they have something to talk about on their show.
Yeah. So I think this is the best way to go about it. Just be like, we have this new character named Ms. Marvel, and her name is Kamala Khan, and here's a comic. And then, like, oh yeah, by the way, also she happens to be Muslim and Pakistani and a woman. Headlining a comic written by a woman. Like, there's all those things, and that's fine, but that's not, like, the big thing. Whatevs. The big thing is new comic, right, guys? And, you know, I know it was, like, on all the comic blogs and that kind of thing, but, it didn't break in the major news media the way that these other stories did, and I think that's the way it needs to be, so that, like, as a parent, you take your kid to the comic book shop, and you don't say, let's look for that comic with the gay guy in it, or let's look for Black Spider-Man. You say, look at this comic. This comic has a brown woman on the cover, and she's like, oh, hey, look, she's Muslim. Oh, hey, that's nice. Why don't I get this for my daughter? Like, just make it part of the discovery of comics, just like every other process that's part of the discovery of comics. Make it so it's not a thing. Make it so it's normal. You know? Like, this shouldn't be a thing. This should be normal.
Yeah, it's a little disappointing that there was ever a fuss, like that anyone would get upset that this character is now Miss Marvel. Like if she's really a shitty character or a bad person or a bad reboot, like, yeah, then you can talk about it, but read the comic first and then decide if you like her or not, right? I don't know. It's just, it's mind-boggling to me. Like David said, like, why do people care when they don't care about it at all?
Yeah.
Otherwise.
So let's talk about the actual comic. I mean, I wanted to put this stuff up there right front and forward because I think that's, like, the amazing strength of this comic is, and it's a major theme of the comic, not necessarily the theme being that she's Muslim or that she's Pakistani. Like, that's not a major theme. The major theme is wanting to feel normal. And I really loved, like, the, when Kamala learns how to shapeshift, and she's like, oh my god, it hurts to be normal. And, like, it clicks, and, like, oh my god, her being shapeshifty is an allegory for teenagers trying to be somebody that they're not. And, like, it does. It hurts you. It hurts your soul to be somebody that you're not truly on, like, your inside. Like, that sucks. That hurts. That takes a lot of work. And that's, like, that is wonderful allegory in a comic. And it's totally worth bringing up. But I also want to talk about, like, Kamala and how she's fucking awesome. Plus, fourth minority that Kamala belongs to, hella big nerd. The interwebs have never failed me. Yes, Kamala.
She writes fanfic.
Yes, I know.
She, like, speaks the language of our people. She's, like, super... So here, this is one of... You know, everybody has, like... I think everybody has prejudices, and I don't necessarily mean against race or something. Everybody has... I think everybody has opinions of things that... Yeah,
I generally don't like gritty comics.
So I tend to... God, I feel so dumb about this. I tend to turn my nose up at comics that I like to call Tumblr darlings.
Oh, yes, I know what you mean, exactly.
I do too.
This is a total Tumblr darling.
And so, it's not that I turn my nose up at them, but it's that I kind of, I don't know.
It's like listening kind of to Taylor Swift. Even if you really like it, you still feel guilty or like, I don't need to listen to that. Like, I don't know, that's probably a bad analogy.
So I've been hearing about how great this comic is, but I never really read it, and I think part of the reason is because it's a Tumblr darling.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was putting my prejudice on this comic unintentionally, and, you know, now you brought up that her fourth minority is that she's a nerd. I feel like Kamala would be reading this comic and posting about it on Twitter, on Tumblr, yes. Writing fanfic about it.
Oh, yes, she would.
Yeah.
And so it's like super meta, you know?
And Oh, God.
Oh, did you see the cover where she's with Wolverine?
No, I didn't see that one.
Oh, it's like just a couple issues past what we read, but it's like she's taking a picture with Wolverine and... Oh, what is it? It's her holding... a picture, or her phone, and there's a picture of her with her arm around Wolverine, and she's, like, so psyched, and he's scowling. And it's like, that is exactly what that character would do.
That is fucking beautiful. And I love, like, when she's on the computer, she has these, like, giant nerd glasses, too. She's awesome. That's the other thing, too, is I really like her as a character and as a person. And, like, her sense of style and fashion with her, like, big-ass, like, furry Russian hat. I love that hat.
The only thing I don't like about her as a character, and this is my gripe with any teenage character is that she's a teenager. And she's written like one, and there's nothing wrong with being a teenager. I just don't usually like reading about them in comics.
Yeah.
But I will say I like her as a character. I think she's really fleshed out from the start. Mm-hmm. Like, she's a real person who has, like, I like her moral integrity, right? She's, like, amidst all her mopiness, she still has this, like, strong desire to do right by others. And she, like, it made me really happy that she decided to just dress like herself and look like herself instead of, you know, getting up as Carol Danvers.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, man, like, she's a teenager.
But, you know, you're right. And, like, after everything that happens in this comics, she still really doesn't want to disappoint her parents. She really does want to be their good daughter. You know? Like, she fights against it the way... Exactly, you're right. Exactly the way a teenager would. She doesn't... She fights against it. But she still, like, when she talks about sneaking out, she's like, I only ever snuck out twice before this, and once was just to make sure I could fucking do it.
Well, what's interesting, what I love about it, too, is it's not that she's actively trying to disobey her parents. It's not rebelling. It's not rebellion for the sake of rebellion. It's that she wants to, you know, we mentioned earlier that she's just trying to fit in, and she's trying to, she's only doing these bad, I guess you could say bad things, because she wants to please other people, her friends and stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, she's also, she wants to be the good daughter to her parents because she loves her parents, not because of some other thing. It's just, you know, you people love their parents and they want to mm-hmm. do, they want to make them happy and be a good, everybody wants to be a good person, right? So there's no like agenda, you know, and
yeah.
That's kind of refreshing in any kind of story. So that from in that regard, it feels very real and heartfelt, you know?
Yeah. And that's reinforced, especially in the comic. Cause like when she's out and when she is disobeying, like in air quotes, disobeying her parents, she's thinking about them and she's like, she's reciting things that they have taught her. Like when she first changes into, Ms. Marvel, and save Zoe, she's talking about that thing that her father always used to say, which is a quote from, I don't remember, but how he used to say, like, you know, kill one person and it's like you've killed the entire human race, and save one person, it's like you've saved the entire human, like, as she's actively out past curfew, she is thinking about them, and doing things that she thinks would make them proud of her. And, like, you're right, it's not even that she's being disobedient, she just is in that situation. She maybe made a bad choice to get her there, but now that she's there, everything that her parents have taught her and told her and made her is still with her. And she's still acting as the child of her parents. And that's... Ah, that's wonderful. So what was your guys... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, do either of you know whether or not she ever tells her parents?
I don't know. I've only read these five. This has been on my pull list, so I have them all in singles, but I only read these five for this show. They've just been sitting there on my shelf waiting.
Yeah, I haven't read past this either, so I don't know.
I actually tried to spoil myself on this and couldn't find an answer, but it's going to be, like, a huge determiner in whether or not...
Right.
I mean, it's going to be... It's definitely going to be a plot event.
Yeah.
But I really want it to be sooner than later.
She has to, because one of her parents is obviously a Skrull. Right? David, back me up. She is obviously part Skrull.
No, okay, so this comic came out right around the time that Marvel was trying to do their Inhumanity event.
Uh-huh.
And that event always kind of confused me, because it never really took off. And at least in the way I thought it was supposed to. So what happened is, during another Marvel crossover called Infinity, Thanos attacks Earth, and Adaland, the Inhuman city, is floating above New York, and it gets attacked by Thanos and it crashes. And the Terrigen mists that transform the Inhumans gets like released all over the, like into the atmosphere. Yeah. And so anybody, so it turns out there's people all over the world who have Inhuman DNA because, Inhumans had like, so the Black Bolt's little kingdom in Adalan is not the only community of Inhumans on Earth. And so the way the Inhumans work is they're like normal, they look like normal humans until they're exposed to the Terrigen Mist. And so,
I thought for sure she was a Skrull.
No. So what happens is the mist gets released. Well, okay, so let me back up. So and in, when Inhumans are like, I think when they become adults or at some point in like their teenage years, maybe around puberty, I don't know, they get exposed to the Terrigen Mists and it manifests in some, for some of them they get powers. I don't know if it's some of them or all of them, but they get powers basically.
Uh-huh.
And what happens is they, the mists come out of these crystals that were created by the Kree, I think, because the humans are genetically modified. They're humans who are genetically modified by the Kree, like thousands and thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
And so they get exposed to the mists and then they go into this cocoon and when they come out of the cocoon, they're changed. Like the most famous Inhumans are like Black Bolt and Medusa. And then their entourage, right? So Black Bolt was like a normal Inhuman kid until he got exposed to the mists and now his voice is destructive, so he can't speak, right? And Medusa's hair is like prehensile. I don't know. It's not, I don't know.
Not sentient. No, it's the
like
wrong
she
word.
Can control it like
prehensile
like
is the right word.
Yeah. And so Kamala apparently has Inhuman DNA in her enough so that when she's exposed to the mists, it transforms her. Now the mists don't transform, I think they don't transform all the Inhumans. Which is why they, why her parents or her brother aren't necessarily changed.
Okay.
And sometimes the transformation is, they could turn into anything. So it's my understanding that, you know, Lockjaw, the giant, like, bulldog Inhuman?
Yeah.
That was a person before.
Oh, that sucks.
Oh. Wow.
That sucks, bro.
And there's one Inhuman who's, like, a gate? I don't know. They don't always, like, it's not always, like, happy, fun times, you know. But, so, the mists get released all over the world, and all these people transform. And because there's so much mist over New York, it, like, has a lot of people in the New York area, and New Jersey, obviously, get exposed to the mists, and there's a bunch of Inhumans popping up now. Like, a lot of them don't know that that's what's happening to them. But that's what's happening. And so, like, Kamala is, she doesn't have, she doesn't look different unless she wants to. I mean, she can shapeshift, obviously, yeah. But it doesn't make a permanent physical change in her visually.
So this totally just exposes my lack of knowledge about the Inhumans and how they work, because I thought for sure she was Skrull. But you talk about, like, the cocoon and the mist, like, that's exactly what happened, obviously.
Yeah, so there was an Inhumanity title. Which was actually the first they had. I don't know if it was supposed to be a series or what, but I don't think it worked out the way Marvel wanted it to. I could be totally wrong, mm-hmm. But there were issues about you know, these Inhumans, these people transforming into Inhumans and not having any idea what's going on, you know, and they were kind of being collected by other Inhumans. They're out trying to, like, save them and kind of help them out to understand what's going on with their powers. Because sometimes their powers are destructive. Like, one guy could, like, turn into a lava monster kind of thing. Like, he looked normal, but then he could kind of do, like, a Human Torch thing.
Mm-hmm.
Except instead of being on fire, he was, like, molten rock. And so that's what the whole Inhumanity thing. And so that's where Kamala comes from.
Okay.
That's where she gets her powers. Mm-hmm. That's what the fog is. Too.
The fog.
Mystery
and
fog.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, then she will have to fess up and tell her parents. I thought for sure there'd be a moment where, like, she would talk about the change, and her parents would be like, oh, you mean how you can stretch now? Like, one of those awkward moments that would be an allegory for puberty.
I kind of like it when that happens, when some kind, when like a family member or a friend recognizes a superhero who thinks they're being all secretive.
Yeah.
Like, I was watching the TV show Arrow the other day, and there's an episode, there's a part where, where Roy Harper is, like, he's getting information.
His voice.
But yeah, he's disguising his voice, and he's meeting up with Captain Lance to get, like, evidence or something.
Yeah.
And Captain Lance knows exactly who he is.
He's like, you're wearing a red hood. You've always worn a red hood.
Yeah, he's like,
exactly
you just,
who you are.
You wear a red. He's like, you wear a red hoodie every day.
We're running a little bit long on this one because it's so good. But do you guys want to talk about your favorite scenes, and then we'll rate this?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do it.
So my favorite scene. I know it said before that it was the lacrosse team. That was like my favorite art scene. My favorite scene, though, was when Bruno and Kamala are in a little bit of a fight. And Kamala says something like, if only you were Pakistani, my parents would be throwing me at you. And Bruno goes, yeah, if only. And I'm like, A, oh my god, the feels. But B, like, as much as Kamala is wanting and trying to be the quote-unquote normal white person with the blonde hair and the big boots with a T, like, at the same time, Bruno in that moment is wishing he was not that. Because Bruno is a normal teenage boy. And he's wishing he wasn't. He's wishing he was Pakistani. And I just love that it's all a matter of perspective. So, like, there's all of this ethnicity and normalcy. But in that moment, you get that the idea of normal isn't about, oh, well, there isn't a normal, blah, blah, blah. Like, there is a normal. For whatever area of the world you live in, there is a quote-unquote normal. But that normalcy is a matter of perspective and how you come at the culture in which you're in. And in that moment, Bruno's like, I want to come to this culture differently, and I can't. And so I'm not normal in the situation that I want to be normal. Like, it's all just a matter of where you stand and what you want from it. And it's like, and also just like, oh, Bruno, I know how you feel. I know how you feel, bro. If only. I loved that moment on, like, multiple levels. That was so well done. And the art in that was wonderful, too. With her just, like, walking away so flippantly, like it's nothing, and Bruno just being, like, in that moment, like, oh, yeah. What about you guys?
It's hard to pick one scene that I liked. I think the best moments were the non-superheroing moments, you know?
Yeah.
Those were good too, but like you mentioned Bruno, right? The whole, her whole relationship with Bruno is great. And I think everything, I feel like everything, the way they interact with each other is like spot on.
Yes.
You know, that's just how teenagers are. They're best friends. Well, no, she says, Bruno calls himself her second best friend, I think, at one
point.
But the way that they act when she's mad at him and they're at school together and she's like keeping her back to him and trying not to look at him, but she's like, oh, I want to talk to him, but I'm so mad at him. And he's like, what's wrong with, why is she mad at me? It's like Kieran Gillen's ability to write teenagers. Remember we talked about this a few episodes
yeah.
ago?
Yeah,
it's like his jam.
Yeah, I feel like this comic really captures teenagers really well also. So that has nothing to do with my favorite scene necessarily. Jen,
good stalling, though. Good stalling.
Jen, you drop some knowledge on us while I try to think of what mine is.
Okay, I gotta say, my favorite scene is the training montage.
Yes.
Like, I love a good training montage, and this is a great one.
Yeah,
it is. Oh, and the art's so good, too. Like, there's this little, like, the first scene is she's lengthening her legs to see if she can up her run times,
mm-hmm.
And, like, she's just standing there with super long legs, and, like, this, like, smirk on her face. It's I love that. And then you see her putting together her costume, and she just has, like, a squeeze tube of, like, gold paint.
Yeah.
It's just, like, this is such a high school science project to her. Right? She's not, like, an Avenger. She's not... She has no resources, so she's just doing this, like, on her own with Bruno, and, it's not like she's even Peter Parker. Like, he made his own costume, too, but his was, like, way higher quality. She's just cobbled things together, and she's, like, testing out her abilities in really wacky ways, and I don't know, it's just such a good piecing together of various things, like, you know, the fact that she has this desire to do good and learn to use her powers, and her relationship with her best friend, or I guess second best friend, and like just the fact that she's an outsider in the superhero community too. She has to like just make all this crap from scratch. It's great.
And I like how she incorporates her Carol Danvers fangirlism into her own costume.
Yeah.
I love her fanny pack, too.
Right? That's just like Batman's utility belt. Same thing.
Fanny packs. They're so practical, yet so ugly.
Did you come up with anything yet, David?
I don't know. It's so hard. There's so much stuff in this comic.
One of the amazing facial expressions that she has throughout this comic, because there's a lot of them. Way to go, Adrian Alfona.
Actually... There's a really good one when they're eating, when they're, it's actually an issue one where they're eating dinner and she's trying to ask to go to the, she's trying to ask her parents to go to the party.
Yeah.
And she's talking to her dad and she says, come on, I'm 16, I promise I won't do anything stupid, don't you trust me? That's a really good facial expression one.
Yeah.
Because she's like, she's like having this emotional, she's, like, overflowing with emotion, and her dad's like, that's nice. I'm just going to eat my dinner and put my foot down. Yeah. And then the next panel, like, she's all pouty and stuff. It's really good. Like, yeah, I really like... My favorite part of this comic is Kamala's non-superhero interaction with her family and friends.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I said this already, but it's just because it's so relatable. Mm-hmm. I was a teenager a while ago, and I get it. I totally get it, Kamala. You know what I was thinking right before we started recording? I was thinking that someone should make, there should be like a comic book convention about like female characters and female creators and stuff, and they should call it KamalaCon.
That is fucking magnificent. Do you want to put that on? We can put that on. I will help you put that on.
I just feel like that, you know, because I feel like the whole Miss Marvel comic is like a good embodiment of the, you know, people always talk about there needs to be more female presence in the industry, and then Gail Simone posted something the other day on one of the social media things, maybe it's Tumblr or Twitter, about how DC is like, there's a bunch of new female led, mm-hmm. Comics coming out and
Starfire.
Yeah. Starfire is one of them. And so I feel like this comic is a good embodiment of that. Like it's diversity on so many levels and it's created by, you know, it's female creator, female character. And so I feel like Miss Marvel would be a great representation of that whole idea. So Kamala Khan sounds like good. Sounds really good to me.
That's baller. I will help anybody who wants to set that up. Let me know. I will hook you up with a venue even in San Jose. I can get you a venue for freezies. Let me know. I will make that shit happen. Anyway, you guys ready to write this? I'm ready to write this.
Yeah.
I'm going to go first.
Go, yeah, go, Andy.
I'm going to give this a 5. I mean, I loved it all the way through. And we talk about, like, every once in a while I'll mention, like, you know, if you had a kid, this would be a good comic to give them. And I'm going to go one more. Like, not only is this a good comic to give a kid, like, my my wife is Indian. My kids are going to be brown. My kids are going to have all kinds of cultural and ethnic identification issues in our society. Like, I'm going to buy a trade paperback of this. I'm hoping there's going to be, like, a nice, like, big totemic edition of this once it's had a bigger run. I'm going to buy it, and I'm going to keep it, and I'm going to give it to my kids when I get older. Like, I'm going to hold on to this fucking thing, G. Willow Wilson. This, like, I'm going to give... This is one of those things... there's a list of things in my head that when my kids get older, I'm going to force-feed them. Things like Star Wars and Avatar the Last Airbender, and this has made the list. This has made the list, G. Willow Wilson. I'm holding on to this, and I'm going to force-feed this to my children whether they fucking like it or not, because it's perfect and beautiful and wonderful, and I'm giving it a 5.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, right? I mean, I have 2 kids, and my kids look... They don't really look like me that much, because they're like...
They look a lot like your wife.
Yeah, they look a lot like my wife. And we... But the thing is, like, my kids are... They're like total messes. They're like the United Nations rolled into a single person, right?
They draw heritage from like 3 continents.
Yeah, like me, I personally am, my dad's Scottish and my mom is half Japanese and she grew up in Japan. And my wife is, my wife was born in Brazil, and she's Jewish. And so my kids are like this mix of all kinds of stuff. My mom, you know, having grown up in Japan, the Japanese culture is her culture. And so my kids call my mom Bachan, which is the Japanese word for grandmother. And I don't think my son even knows that that's what that word means. I think he just that's just what he calls his grandma.
Yeah.
Aww.
And so this is the kind of comic that I think would be perfect for my kids to read, especially, I mean, who knows what my kids are going to be like when they get older, but, I mean, Jen... Nerds. Yeah, probably. They're either going to be nerds or they're going to hate nerds. But not because there's anything wrong with nerds, but just because they're, like...
Like, oh, great, Dad's dressing up for another Star Wars convention.
Yeah. Well, we're going to dress... We're going to...
Oh, you know we will.
Well, yeah, my son... Well, he already... My wife was like... So Andy had a Star Wars wedding, listeners. And my son dressed up as a Jedi. And in April, we're going to Star Wars Celebration. And my wife was like, Lucas... My son's name is Lucas. She was like, do you want to wear your Jedi costume? He was like, no. And we were like, why? And he's like, I want to be a stormtrooper.
Yeah! Your son is such a badass.
And so lately his thing has been he wants to play Batman, and so he's Batman. My wife is Batwoman. I'm Batman Daddy, and my daughter is Batman Baby.
Oh, that is so cute.
And he has like these sticks, just sticks that he found outside on the ground that he kind of throws around the house, and they're his Batman boomerangs. So I think he'll be pretty. He's gonna be a nerd. Well, and then like my daughter has a signed copy of signed by why can't I think of her name now? Oh God, the woman who raised
Kelly Sue DeConnick.
Kelly Sue DeConnick, yeah. She has a signed issue in her room of Captain Marvel. And so, you know, my kids are going to be exposed to it. I'm not going to shove it down their throats, but I'm not going to hide this kind of thing, you know. So this will be one of, like you, Andy, I would like to get a trade of this and just put it on the shelf with my other trades, because I'm sure my kids are going to go through at one point, they're going to look at what's on the shelf and read the different stuff that's there, and I want this to be one of the things they read.
So what are you rating it?
You know, I wasn't sure what I was going to rate this before we started talking about it. I had no doubt in my mind that I really liked the comic. But I'm going to give it a 5 also. But it's because I felt that, like, this comic was so easy to read and so relatable. And I read it really fast, but not because I wanted to get through it quickly. It just flowed so well, and there weren't really any parts in the comic where I had to stop and be like, that's strange or that's weird.
Yeah. It was none of those.
It was just a great, great story. And, you know, this comic is a Tumblr darling. But the thing is, that is not a negative thing. That's just me being dumb. This is a great comic. And if you haven't read it, I feel like I'm the last person who... I'm the person who is, like, behind because I haven't read this yet. I mean, up until now. But this is a great comic, and yeah. You should definitely go read it. Even if you're not a teenage Muslim girl from New Jersey with superpowers, this is about people, and you should read it. Everyone should read this comic.
So I'm guessing you're giving it a 5?
I'm giving it a 5. Did I say that? I thought I had said
that. Oh, I've been waiting for you to give me a rating.
Oh, yeah. I thought I had said 5 like a little while ago. But yes, it's a 5 for me. This is such a good comic. Thank you for making us read this.
For sure. Jen?
One question before I rate this. And it's 2. David, how do you feel about your son joining the Empire?
Hey, you know what? As long as he's happy, I don't care what he does for a living.
And hey, the Imperial Academy is one of the best, one of the finest institutions in the Star Wars galaxy.
And just because he goes to that school doesn't mean he's going to be... I mean, Han Solo went to the Imperial Academy.
I was just
going to
say, he might end up being Han Solo.
Yeah, you know.
He might be a college dropout, just like
but
Han.
But there's also a 90% chance he'll never, ever be able to shoot something.
Hey, but that's great, because he'll have a great military career... Well, he'll get discipline and government pay and a pension and stuff, and he won't kill anybody. And that's just because he's not going to be able to because they just aren't good at
it. He'll maintain
karma. Well, it's good he has a bright future. So, I liked this comic. David, you are not alone with the Tumblr darling thing. Like, the fact that this was so touted on Tumblr made me really grouchy about reading it. Like, about picking it up in the first place. I did enjoy reading it a lot, and I'm going to give it a 4. The art is spectacular. Mm-hmm. We didn't actually get a chance to talk about it too much, but it's just, like, the facial expressions are spot on. The coloring is amazing. Like, it's surreal in places, and it's really good. And I, as I said earlier, like, I like the characters. They're people, most of them, except Zoe. And Kamala she's a really nicely fleshed out character for only 5 issues. Like, we know all about her and what she's about and what she wants and fears and hopes for. And, like, that's quite a feat of writing. Like, that's actually very impressive. My biggest gripe, and I know this is, like, just, this is me being dumb about it, but, and, it's a bias, it's a long-standing grudge against this trope, but it's just, tell your parents, Kamala.
Yeah.
Just stop being grounded and tell them you are now a superhero and work it out from there, because you're just gonna hurt more people if you keep it a secret.
Yeah.
And that docks a point for me, so I'm gonna give it a 4. If she tells her parents in a future issue and this doesn't get drawn out as a storyline, it's a 5.
All right. Okay. Good. You didn't spoil our score too badly then.
Well, Jen's like 4 with an asterisk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
It's like the Barry Bonds of scores.
So, you guys ready for fight night?
Not at all.
I think I am.
Fight Night, Round 1.
So for this week's Fight Night, we're going to do, and I started this out because I was fairly certain she was a Skrull, but now it feels stupid, where we're going to do Best Alien Race to Wake Up in a Cloud of Mist and Discover That You Are Now a Part of.
See, like, it didn't occur to me that, I figured, oh, she's Inhuman. That makes sense.
So I'll include Inhuman, so, like, things like Inhumans is alien, and basically anything non-human, which I guess
they live on the moon, mostly. So.
Yeah, so they're lunar. They're of the lunar race. They're not
Terran. And they are a product of Kree engineering, so.
Yeah.
I think
so. Let's have Jen go first.
I am gonna go, this feels like such a dirty hipster answer, with Gallifreyan. I do like Doctor Who. And, dude, if you're a Time Lord, Time Lady, whatever way you want to swing it.
Lordette.
You get all of time and space. And I would take advantage of that so hard. Like, I would just go everywhere and dick with people. Not maliciously, but just, like, what if you could prank Winston Churchill?
Yeah.
What if you could do that in your life? That, yeah, I'm down. So, yes, Time Lord Lady. Okay.
Round two.
I'm going to go next. I had a really hard time with this. First, I thought maybe Twi'lek, because I like Twi'lek women. Then I thought, oh, maybe Togruta, because I like Togruta women. Then I thought maybe Andorian, because I like Orion women. Then I thought maybe Asari, because I like Asari women, or Draenei, because, like, basically it came down to, I want to be a part of this race, because I want to bone their women. And then I thought, well, I should stretch out from that. Maybe pick somebody that already reflects my personality. And I thought maybe Elcor. And I realized that by not being able to decide, I really hadn't made the decision for myself. I could just be Q from Star Trek. I could be one of the Q. Then not only am I like a Time Lord in having all of space and time to play with, but if I really wanted a Twi'lek to, you know, play with, I could just snap my fingers and make one in a flash. Like, it solves every question of what race you want to be a part of, because for one day you could be that race, one day you could be the others, one day you could be the others, and you could really fuck with anybody as a Q. Think about in the Star Trek TNG, he had like fucking Einstein pulled in, he pulled in all these people and then sent them back and none of them knew. You could fucking do whatever the hell you wanted when you were a Q. It's basically being a god. And I basically want to be God. So I want to be a Q.
Round three.
So I'm also going to pick a Star Trek race, and I'm going to go with Ferengi. And here's the reason why.
Good like, one.
The you know, people are going to say, oh, Ferengi, they're really ugly. But that never really seemed to come up for, like, Quark or Rom. And I feel like if you're Ferengi, you have a natural aptitude to being a baller. Like, you have a racial imperative to be rich. You know, you could get Umox. That looks like pretty great, right, Andy?
Oh, yeah, it does.
I feel like Quark's dressed really well all the time. You could be like a greedy bastard and like, you're always making money and like have these get rich quick schemes and stuff. But the thing is, like, that's just you, it's in your DNA. There's nothing you can do about it. I feel like the Ferengi are going to have an awesome time. And I'm not talking about the TNG Ferengi, because those guys were just jerks. I'm talking about Quark and Grand Nagus and Moogie, Rom, Nog. They just, that whole family. I just want to be part of that family.
Okay.
What's his name? I want to be Brunt.
Brunt. Oh, Investigator Brunt.
Liquidator Brunt.
Liquidator Brunt.
That would be cool. Liquidator. Your job is to just sell stuff.
And their divine treasury. They do have a cool religion.
There's so much great stuff about being Ferengi.
I'm going to vote first. Since neither one of you picked a race that has females with head tails of some kind, or things coming out of their head, and also blue boobies.
Oh man, I forgot something.
What were you going to say about the Ferengi?
Well, all the women are naked all the time.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. That's why David's getting my point, because in their culture, naked women constantly, which is a little weird because, you know, they were really upset that their mother was wearing clothes. Ooh, no. Never mind. Not that, then. I'm going to go Gallifreyan, because I have no desire to see women in my family naked all the time.
I think you just sabotaged yourself, David.
Yeah. So I'm going to go Gallifreyan, because it's kind of like my choice, only not as good. So Gallifreyan. David, what about you?
Oh, man. I'm going to go with Q, because, like, Q, the Q from Star Trek, man, he's just living it up.
Yeah.
I would want to be him. He's not that weird. I don't want him to. I don't want to wear that weird courtroom costume he wears with like the cylinder on his head.
That was a historical costume.
Yeah, I know. But it was terrible. But other than that,
don't blame him. Blame human future history.
Yeah, but he just. Why are there so many like dwarves hanging out with him all the time?
That's what happened in that period. They were mutated into dwarves.
Well, anyways.
From the nuclear wars. Isn't that how nukes work? Everybody turns into dwarves.
Yeah, it is exactly how it works. Everybody shrinks. But yeah, I'm going to go with Q, because he just seems like he's having... You know what my favorite Q moment is?
Tell me.
I'm going way off track. It's in Voyager when he out-face tattoos Chakotay.
Yes!
That's my favorite Q moment.
And you know what? He can do that, because if you're Chakotay, what the fuck are you going to do? What can you do? All right, Jen?
Oh, God, this is really hard.
No, I'm basically your choice, but better.
But now I'm thinking about Ferengi.
And all the naked family members you would have to see.
But Nog. Do you remember?
He's the outlier.
When he's... But he's...
He's Nog banished so from his society.
Nog is the Worf of the Ferengi.
Yeah. But... And then... Just... Everything about them, like, sharpening their teeth. And the ear massages.
That's Umox.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's the Grand Nagus. Okay, this is really tough.
Fire!
Because...
Fire!
Okay, I'm voting for David.
Yes!
Damn it! Damn it, I was really hoping the naked mother would screw it up. Balls! That's, I am so falling behind.
Anyway, well, everybody gets a point in this one, right?
Huh?
Didn't we all get a vote?
Oh, we did! Okay, so enough point. Okay, yeah. So everybody gets a point for this one because we had 1 point for everybody, which is good. I almost picked Ferengi, but thank you for pulling me off of that choice, David. Let's get the scores, find out where everybody's at.
Jen, 4. David, 3. Andy, 2.
But I'm still behind. I'm still 2 behind Jen, which is a problem. Well, I'll try to make it up next week. Next week, we start off our best of 2014 graphic novels. We're going to do 4 episodes on the best graphic novels of 2014. That's 4 more fight nights. I have 4 more chances to catch the fuck up. Next week, February 20th, the episode will come out. We're going to read How to Be Happy by Eleanor Davis. I have no idea what this is about. Do you know, Jen?
Me neither.
No, I chose it based on a brief Amazon description and the cover.
That's how I picked mine, too. But that's next week, How to Be Happy by Eleanor Davis. As always, you can support the show, patreon.com/welcometocomics, audibletrial.com/welcometocomics. Sign up for a free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/welcometocomics. But really, I think you guys should do Patreon. I don't care if we get less money from you from Patreon than we would have gotten from Audible. That's awesome. I'm fine with that, because if you're a baller on Patreon, we will do an episode just for you, like we just did for our boy Raymond. Raymond's awesome. Raymond is awesome. Next week, How to Be Happy, Eleanor Davis. Until then, goodbye, everybody.
Oogie.
Say bye.
You do a ROM voice way better than I do. It's like spot on, Andy.
No.
Brother, say brother.
Brother.
Yeah.
Brother.